This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by you guys, because you guys have gone over to frogpants.cratejoy.com and checked out the Crate Joy from Frog Pants. Now, you might say, well, Scott, is this a thing for the whole network? No, it's exclusive to Current Geek. It is literally the mechanism we use to pay for this particular show. And what's in there? All kinds of cool stuff. Shot glasses, USB chargers, prints, cards, things from our guests, things Tom has written, art that I've made. Every month, in fact, there's art that I've made. And you can only get it one way, and that's going to frogpants.cratejoy.com. Consider it, do it, and help us out. Now on with the show.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. The geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Scott Johnson. We have a brand new dog in the house, and she just learned about the gavel at the beginning of Current Geek.
Oh, did make her go running or what? What happened there? I feel bad.
No, she just kind of woke up from her nap and then looked at me like, what are you doing that? Now she's like leaning against my leg.
Well, by the way, congratulations on that. Brand new dog in the house. That's awesome.
Oh, yes. Ray. Ray the dog.
Ray, like R-E-A, right? Yeah, we got to keep
R-E-Y,
that in mind.
Yeah.
R-E-Y is what I meant. R-E-A would be wrong. Well, that's awesome. We also seem to have another guest with us, it turns out. I'm hearing somebody's kid, which is awesome. Hey, let's...
That's probably mine.
Is that yours?
Yep.
She made an unintentional remix out of our opening theme that sounded awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, you're totally fine. This
no,
stuff
it was really
happens,
cool,
man.
Actually. It
Take
fit.
It from one father to another. I totally get it. Let's introduce our guests today. We have guests, and I'm really happy to be introducing them. First, an old friend of the program. Been around forever, I feel like now. The very early days of TMS is when I met her. It is April Ness, a.k.a. Viking Lass, a.k.a. Butts. She's an artist.
Hi, everybody.
She's a voice artist. She's a Twitch streamer. She's all those things. It's good to have you here, April.
It's really good to be here. And I actually got my start with the internet with you guys in TMS. So yeah. This is really, really cool.
Weren't you at the time you were like poking at rats or something?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the deal?
I was working for pharmaceutical companies, and it all started with the email that I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
I had a rat jump in my face as you screamed in a podcast in my ear, and I wrote in about it. And then the friendships began.
Yeah, the Good. Rest is history, and many nerdtaculars and traveling across the country and a million other things have happened since. And I could not be more stoked about all the crap you're up to. In fact, in the middle of the show, we're going to talk more about what your current projects are. So very much looking forward to that.
Yay.
Daniel Way also with us. He is a comic book writer and founder and director of Geekcraft Expo. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. Always good to have somebody in the comic book world on our show, Tom. I feel like that's a good thing
Absolutely.
For us.
Yeah.
Never going to complain about that.
I want to hear more about Geekcraft Expo
yeah.
later on, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Awesome. Yeah, we'll ask you all kinds of good questions. You can answer them at will. But before we do any of those things, it's time for the headlines. Oh, that's quiet. Why is that quiet? Let's try that again.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what happened this week?
Well, breaking news just before the show started, well, maybe a few hours, actually earlier today, Rainn Wilson has been cast as Harry Mudd, Harcourt Fenton Mudd. As if you don't recognize the name, he's a guy from Trouble with Tribbles in the original Star Trek. He will be Harry Mudd in the forthcoming Star Trek Discovery series.
Okay, I'm fine with that, I suppose. I think he's maybe just fine for that role, but I don't understand how... Well, how old is Harry Mudd in the Kirk timeline? I guess it's just 10 years.
Well, this is happening around the same. We haven't got official word on exactly when, but it's happening around the same time as the Kirk time.
All right. I'm fine with it. How do you guys feel about Mudd as a character? He's kind of, you know, he was this robot lady loving psychopath from the original series. And he was kind of like Q in a lot of ways. I felt like Q was sort of
really?
A little bit like the way Q would sort of meddle in your affairs. Not the.
Yeah, but without any of the powers, right?
Yeah, none of the omnipotent galaxy wide sort of godlike powers. But he had that thing of like driving Kirk crazy all the time in the way that it seemed like Q was always going after Picard. So I don't know. I mean, I as a character, he always just struck me as, oh, it's one of those episodes. Fine, I'll get through with it. But. It'll be interesting to see a new take. Daniel, are you excited about Harry Mudd coming back?
I would say, as you were describing the character, I was like, if I if you were coming to me and said, all right, so we have a part, if I was casting director,
yeah,
and you said, all right, so we have this part, we're looking for somebody, robot loving. Yeah. If you'd given that description, I would have been like, I'm going to see if I can get Rainn Wilson on the phone. It just, it seems right. You know, I mean,
yeah.
And I think, I mean, I'm assuming they're just going to kind of take the foundation and build up from it. Just like I'm sure, you know, the original actor did.
Yeah. That seems right to me as well.
It should be fun. It sounds fun.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, we haven't seen a lot of Rainn Wilson lately. Maybe it's time for him to make a big comeback in something.
There's that too.
Yeah.
You know, he could come back a la, you know, David Letterman.
Sure.
Be like,
by the way, I've made a horrible mistake when I mentioned Troubles with Tribbles. I was confusing a reference to him in Deep Space Nine's Trials and Tribulations.
Oh.
He was in I, Mud, and Mud's Women.
Right.
All right.
There you go. It's all right. The Tribbles business is it's confusing. I can tell you that much.
I know I haven't avoided about a dozen emails, but yeah, at least I can stop a few more.
The Star Trek Online community is an uproar.
No kidding. Hey,
I'll be honest with you guys. The only Star Trek information I know is because of listening to TMS and
Stump a Trek Nerd. That's the one. You're fine. Trump's in the news. It's fine.
Trump a Struck Nerd.
I will tell you, thank you to TMS. I have actually wooed one or two geeky guys with some knowledge. So I thank you for that. But I honestly know nothing. I just like Rainn Wilson and I want him to come back. So I'll check this out for that.
All right. So you're somebody still in their 20s, right?
No.
Are you 30 now? You're not 30 now.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. When did that happen? That was fast.
Last May. I'll be 31 in a couple months.
All right. So my point being, you kind of are out of the TOS range, right? Like even Tom and I weren't even alive when TOS was on the air. It's just that we saw it because it was on syndicated TV and whatever. And I always wonder where that changes. Like, at what point did people stop seeing the stuff I saw? And I'm going to encourage you just hop on Netflix and just see what you think. It's old. It's cheesy. It's terrible. You should do that. I think you'd have a good time.
I used to watch Star Trek with my brother because my brother is your typical geek. He's into all the typical stereotypical geek stuff, which is great, like Doctor Who, Star Trek, Star Wars. So growing up, he's 4 years older than me. I used to watch Star Trek with him and I loved it. Mm-hmm. But I've just never gone back to it myself yet. There's a lot of things for me to catch up on. And that is actually one of them that I would like to understand what everyone's talking about because all my friends are Star Trek fans. So, yeah.
Well, Tom, it goes back to our whole, we always have this conversation about there's so much stuff now, including old archival stuff, plus all the new stuff. It's kind of hard to expect people to have seen everything anymore. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's like books.
Yeah, you could just watch TV.
Yeah.
Never watch it all.
Daniel, you're in comics. Comic world is just stacks and stacks of 25-cent long box sales, right? Like, there's a million comics. And some people always assume, oh, well, if you haven't read Dark Knight, then you're terrible. Or if you haven't read Watchmen, then what are you doing? But I feel like we're getting to that point with comics as well.
Whenever I come across someone that hasn't read, like, you know, some of the big books or even kind of some of the, you know, more well-regarded, you know, smaller books, I always get stoked because I'm like, oh my God, I'm about to change your life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you know, here's a copy of this. Here's a copy of Brat Pack. Yeah. You're going to love it.
And I almost get jealous when people, you know, get to experience for the first time.
You need to leech onto them and like try and live vicariously through them, but suck up as much of that first reading. Like Watchmen, book literally flipped my mind and made me see the world in a different way.
Yeah.
And I recommend anyone who has not read that, read it. And then go watch the movie if you want it to be me. If you're a masochist, go watch the movie afterwards.
Movie's fine. The movie's okay. But yes, the comic book is not just mind-altering, but it altered the way I thought about comic books. Like, it changed the way it changed what could be done with comics in my head. And I kind of just changed, it basically made me a fan. Because up to that point, it was like, all right, capes and cowls, this is fun. I like Batman, he's all right, or whatever.
Power fantasies for nerds.
Yeah, it changed everything.
For a lot of people, it flipped that switch in their head. They're like, wait a minute, it's a medium and it's not a genre. You can tell all kinds of stories with this medium.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The way you can tell it, like the angles that they chose to illustrate it from, like just every little scene, they chose like either a certain... because comics are just a moment at a time and you have to pick that right time. And if you're able to do that, you have this amazing talent. And the moments they pick to draw and have in that story are just utterly fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it. I really appreciate it. And I have such a high regard for comic artists. I'm not sucking up to you, Daniel, but I'm just saying.
That's all right. I'm a writer anyway. So
yeah.
We're good.
Yeah. It made me respect comics a lot more as well.
Sure. Well, blue wieners will do that to me every time.
Every time.
I've had a nickel for every time you said that. Hey, Max Temkin is one of the creators of Cards Against Humanity, posted that he intends to, quote, buy the browser history of every congressman and congressional aide and publish it. Why? Because the U.S. Congress passed legislation to bar FCC rules from going into effect that would have required opt-in consent for ISPs to monetize consumer data in the aggregate. Temkin has since made it clear that he knows how difficult such a task will be and that it could take a long time, and he might need to employ tactics like the Freedom of Information Act to do it. So I don't know if he's backing off so much as realizing what it would take to actually do this.
Or maybe he found out that he could get it for like $8.
He got a good deal. Yeah. Less money than a Cards Against Humanity expansion. It's funny though.
I'm not quite making a stand.
Yeah. Right.
But here's the thing. Max Temkin, anytime something happens in anything, society, government, whatever, I usually go, uh-oh, what will Max Temkin say? I watch his Twitter account very carefully because he has a tendency to do this. He'll swing in and go, oh, yeah, well, this, and it'll be some irreverent sort of approach to whatever the topic may be. And earlier this week, Tom and I were talking on Daily Tech News Show about the fact that the uproar about this private browsing data and ISPs was not about them taking rules away, because there weren't any to begin with. It was taking away at least the immediate opportunity to introduce rules that could protect our data. Do you think, now we've had a couple of days, Tom, do you feel like that fallout has fallen away and we're okay now? Or are people understanding it better? Or is it still a big freak out?
No, there's still a big freak out. Thursday's show, Daily Tech News Show, we tried to let folks know there are some existing protections. So even though there weren't FCC rules, the Telecommunications Act prevents these companies from selling individual records. People out there who are trying to raise money to buy individual congressional representatives' records can't do that. It's against the law. What they can do is sell in aggregate. And what the FCC was trying to do is put some restrictions on that and require opt-in to say, even when you're selling in aggregate, you should have the permission of someone to include their data in that aggregation. So there are things to be concerned about. I was just trying to make sure that people were concerned about them for the right reasons.
Sure. Sure. Daniel, you're afraid about your data getting sold off to somebody? You worried about that?
Gosh, I hadn't really thought of it.
I bet he's deleting files right now.
Yeah. I've always actually been kind of, I'm always pretty careful about what I put out there. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think I was the last person to get a Facebook account. Yeah. And even, I don't even really use it. I don't, you know, cautious about even what photos, I put on Twitter. I guess I've always just kind of tried to maintain some sort of buffer.
Right. Well,
do you find yourself not doing a search because you know it's being logged somewhere?
No. I mean, there's been plenty of times in researching for stories where it's just like, well, this is putting me on a list, you know? You end up searching some pretty, spiky things, you know.
Sure.
You're building stories up or just building up, you know, background information.
Yeah.
They've already got me, you know, but I guess I haven't really thought about, it does freak me out a bit when I'll open up my email and I'll see, you know, the specified ads.
Yeah.
You know, where they're like, you were just shopping for this, and here it pops it up, you know.
Yeah.
Because I've never once seen an ad for something that I would actually buy. I guess I'm more pissed off that it doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
I always get ads for things that I just bought.
All right.
Oh yeah, there's that too. Like, hey, you want to buy it again?
Yeah, that's how it goes for me.
And here's the other thing. You know, when you buy something on Amazon, it gives you the option. Do you want to tell everyone that you bought this?
Yeah. No kidding.
No. You just bought the 20-inch industrial strength toilet bowl scrubber. Would you like to tell everyone about it?
Maybe, who knows? Well, I mean, I've always, so April, I'll throw it to you. I've always felt like so much of my life in the last, well, really since the inception of the internet has been publicly on display, and I don't really care because kind of who I am in public is who I am in private, and I say just as many dumb things on the air as I do off the air. So it really has never bothered me. I don't like the idea of a company making a bunch of money off of whatever it is I do necessarily, because I'm already paying them and they're going to make money off my data, which is a little bit weird. But as another, as a fellow web content creator, how does it make you feel to know that that data is being potentially sold or at the very least collected?
Well, at first, I remember when a while ago, when everyone started getting super like, oh, Big Brother's watching, oh, they're selling everything, I was like, what do I care? Like, just like you, like, I'm very open and honest as I can be on my stream or in, and it's the same in public. And I'm not ashamed of the way I feel about certain opinions and things. And I have a lot of embarrassing photos on Facebook still, which I'm fine with. It's kind of hard to embarrass me, which it's fun to don't try. Oh, there
you go. Yeah, that's not a challenge.
Anyway, so at first I was like, oh, whatever, I've got nothing to hide. But then the other day, probably about a week or so ago, I was involved in a group conversation on Twitter. And we were making a joke using the mushroom emote, which is like, it looks like a Mario mushroom with the red and the white spots. So we were all doing that. Ha ha ha, whatever, funny. Next thing I know, on Facebook, not Twitter, Facebook, there was an ad for a mushroom lamp with mist coming out of it that looks exactly like that emote. Like, no joke, a minute or two after. Like, yeah. It was, and it freaked me out. And it's like, I don't have anything to hide. Or anything like that, but it made me feel violated. I won't lie. It made me very uncomfortable. I can't pinpoint exactly what it is, but I didn't like it.
Well, that happens to me all the time. I'll put up some art and somebody will take it and make a mouse mat out of it and sell it on Etsy until someone tells them to take it down, or, you know, some t-shirt
even, like,
will show up.
Private
and,
messages. Yep. Like,
yep.
Like, that was just freaky to me because it wasn't like anything I tweeted or anything like that. It was a private message in Twitter, yeah. And it ended up on Facebook somehow.
Well, maybe that's my whole point with this whole thing, is that I'm not so much worried about how public I am. It's just already hard enough to stop other people from taking your data and doing things with it that have nothing to do with the companies you're paying for connections. But to have them also have that option, like, it's hard enough to fight the public on stealing your stuff. And we're in a unique case, right? We're talking about, you know, my mom just needs to say hi to her grandkids and write notes on things, and who cares? Like, she doesn't care about that stuff. There's nothing to steal. But I've got, you know, actual reasons why it could be a problem from a monetary standpoint. So I already have to fight that. I don't want to also fight Comcast or fight, you know, Time Warner or whoever to not push my data around. And even though Tom keeps reminding me it's in aggregate, which is a big difference than them saying, ooh, we found a cool thing he did and we're going to sell it. It's still just, I don't know, something about it rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just so you know, I have no idea why ads for the Complete Works of Air Supply are showing up on the pages I browse.
I do, but I'm not going to say why I think you get those.
Speaking of scary things, the trailer for It is out and scaring the heck out of everybody. My wife, who works for Fandango, she works on movieclips.com. She has to watch trailers for her job.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm skipping through parts of this. I'm not watching the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Bill Skarsgård, whom you probably don't recognize because you didn't watch Hemlock Grove on Netflix, but he was on that, puts on the clown makeup to become Pennywise. A role made iconic, of course, by Tim Curry in the 1990 made-for-TV version. And It floats into theaters September 8th.
So we got some big Stephen King movies and things coming, right? So Dark Towers this year, although it just got delayed to August, right?
August, yeah.
It's supposed to be July, went to August. Very excited about that, whatever. Like, but I feel like we're at a place where Stephen King's best work might see its best adaptations finally. Because I don't know why, it just feels like a ripe time for it. The best stuff that'll be good for TV will end up there. And the best stuff that'll end up not as a series, but as a standalone film or a sequel or whatever will end up there. And the craft is better. The directors grew up with his work. It's like, I don't know what to compare it to. It's like the Marvel movies. You know, we're good at these now. And long ago, you know, long gone are the Pet Sematary days and, you know, Creepshow and all that. That stuff was fun and campy and all that. But nobody took Stephen King as seriously as I think he needs to be. So this is a big year for that. And that It trailer is awesome. That book scared the hell out of me. But I'll say the reason
the book, the story of just that character.
Yeah.
That I've always I've read almost all Stephen King stuff.
Yeah.
Well, granted, I probably led off at around 92.
Mm.
Okay. So everything up to that point.
Yeah. There's some good stuff.
As far as that story was concerned, it was that character.
Yeah.
The rest was kind of this time jumping story about kids but Pennywise, yeah, he's terrifying.
Yeah. Hey, it's all right. It's our first one. So I was going to say, though, the reason I'm excited may not be the same reason you are. I think Pennywise is a great character and is scary as crap, and clowns with makeup and all that stuff is scary anyway. And it really taps into this primal thing of me when I was a kid and I hated clowns. But also, we're really good now at saying, hey, we need something set kind of in the 80s and we need all the kids to look accurately like they live in that time, Stranger Things style, whatever. And bring that back in a way that, I mean, that trailer was immediately nostalgic for me, and it's not even based on anything other than a book I read. So I don't know if they'll pull it off. We'll see when it comes out, but that trailer has me pretty excited about what that thing could be. So
I haven't watched the trailer, and now I'm tempted
to.
I've avoided it so far. Here's the thing, is I love scary movies. I love creepy, gory stuff, but for some reason, fake gore and horror and thriller stuff always just gives me crazy nightmares. Like, I still have nightmares about Jurassic Park. And I'm 30. it's so like, I want to watch it, but I don't know if I should.
You should watch it, April. You'll float too.
Yeah, you'll be fine. You'll float also. No. Just don't hit your head on the thing in the street. Well, hold on though. So actually, this is an interesting point. My daughter was terrified of it as well, but she was super young. She was like 2 or something when Jurassic Park came out.
Probably shouldn't have been watching it.
I know. She really shouldn't have. Yes, she really shouldn't have. She used to call this scary movie with the dinosaurs in it. And she was terrified of it. And I don't remember how she even saw it. I didn't like sit down with her or anything, but she saw parts of it, scared her. But April, you're a little older than her, about 10 years older. so that means you saw that movie when you were like 10, 11, maybe.
My mom wouldn't let me. I remember like I wanted to be a paleontologist growing up. I've always been obsessed with dragons. I still have the same dragon floor mats in my car as when I was 16. Like, yeah. I still have those. And she wouldn't let me go to the theater. And she actually told me when she got back, like, well, after I had seen the movie a couple years later, that she was so into the movie that during the kitchen scene and the raptor opens the kitchen door, spoiler, they can open doors, guys. She was just like, how did they train them to do that? And she's a special woman. But I love that movie. I just rewatched it like a week or so ago. Like, it's just so good. I must have been about 14 when I finally watched it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. But my God, anytime, so I get anxiety nightmares, and I can usually kind of figure out what's stressing me out via what my nightmare is about.
Yeah.
And the dinosaurs tend to be just kind of a generalized stress. Like, there's usually raptors, but a T-Rex is always involved.
Yeah. Well, just,
and then sometimes they're cool.
Yeah. So, well, don't worry, because, you know, your nightmares tonight will all be current geek related. So you'll know what's going on.
Well, yeah, let's turn to a heartwarming story now. 35 years ago, a patron of the Great Falls, Montana Library stole a copy of Bid Time Return, a science fiction book by Richard Matheson. In a letter to the library, the man said he read it 25 times over the years, got it signed by the author, even though it wasn't his, and decided after 35 years he wanted a chance of redemption, spent the money to have the book restored because it was in tatters, and returned it to the library with $200 inside and an apology.
Wow. Daniel, you didn't tell us about how you got your start. Got started in your writing career. This is intense.
Yeah, that's such a strange story.
yeah,
that he held on to the book. You know.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's. It kind of feels like the setup for another novel. You know what I mean?
And now he's optioning his story.
Yeah, exactly. But what would make, I mean, have you as a writer?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, have you ever kept, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example of this.
Have I ever stolen library books?
Yeah, I never have.
Tell us all your criminal record.
How many library books do you have in your house right now?
When did you know?
No, I actually had a vested interest in keeping a good relationship with my library when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I grew up, we were like poor, like really poor.
Yeah.
And libraries are free. I loved my library. Those Stephen King books that I read as a kid, all from the library.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had a limit. I think it was like, because it was like six or seven. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to bring them back because if I didn't, I couldn't get any more.
Right.
I would read whole shelves of books.
My feeling about this is probably this person found it, has had a point in their life where they want to just, maybe they're just making amends across the board. There's all sorts of things going on.
It could be, but he could have. Well, who reported this story? I mean, because I understand. Okay. Yeah. I understand, you know, if he just puts the money in the little card, you know, sleeve in the back, and just hands it, you know, drops it in the book deposit. But I guess because they would have his library card number, you know, they would know.
Well, no, he never checked it out.
Oh, he never stole it. Off. Oh, he just took
literally
it.
Literally stole it. Not like I checked it out, then I never returned it.
This is not overdue fine material. This is like I thieved it.
Yeah.
So why do you steal books that are free
from a library? I know.
Because you're a bad boy.
You know what? This is a story.
Yeah. See, I'm telling you, there's more to it. We don't know what the book is. Do we know what the book is?
Yeah, no, the book is Bid Time Return by Richard Matheson.
Do we know what that book's about, generally speaking? Do we know what the synopsis is?
It's a sci-fi book about time travel.
Okay, so maybe.
Matheson wrote I Am Legend.
Yeah.
Wait, no, he didn't restore the book. He went back in time and got the original version.
See, that's where I was going.
He stole it.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I like but he stole it from himself so he would feel redemption and feel better about everything.
That's right. But he couldn't touch himself or else he'd be like Ron Silver in Time Cop and turn purple and die. So you got to be careful. Time Cop's a terrible movie.
The book is
movie.
About traveling back in time to court a 19th century stage actress.
Oh,
really? Why?
The plot
There's
thickens,
a lot of
everybody.
Women in the world.
The plot thickens. No doubt
My
about
first,
it.
My first thought is. It's like, why is he suddenly going through all these regrets? Someone should check on his mental stability.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he's in a recovery program, you know, and he's trying to make amends.
Could be.
You know, the 13th step is to return all stolen library books.
Yes, obviously.
The old silent 13th step I've never heard of. That makes sense. That's
because everyone's so ashamed of it. It's the worst thing you can ever do, steal from a library. So no one really talks about it.
This is a book you can... Oh, my. So to buy a hardcover version of this book on Amazon, $369.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
It's out of print.
It's out of print.
It's always like that. I was trying to, when books go out of print, it's just like I was trying to track down a book. It's called like, I think it was just called Undercover. It was E. Howard Hunt's book. I don't know if you know him from Watergate.
Oh yeah.
That was the first thing that, you know, out of print. And I found a copy. I was like, oh, great. And it was like $400 and some odd. I was like, wait a minute.
Huh.
And I got off of Amazon and just went to an online bookstore and they're like, $6.
Little tip here. There's a website called abebooks.com, which is a consortium of various book dealers and independent bookstores.
I think that's where I found it.
Is that where you found it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
So that's a place to go.
Yeah. That's awesome.
You got your plug in. There you go, 8 books.
Nice.
He's famous for some other stuff. Spielberg's What Dreams May Come, Incredible Shrinking Man, of course, The Omega Man, which was...
I Am Legend.
Yeah, I Am Legend.
Yeah. So, the I Am Legend author.
So apparently his books go for a lot of money if you've got out-of-print copies, and this guy spent $200 to restore it, but someone's going to make $400.
Someone's stealing that book again right
now. Right now.
He spent a lot more to restore it than gave the library $200 on top of that.
Yeah.
Oh, he's totally an anarchist because, A, that money's going to be fake, and, B, he just wants to tempt someone else to steal it. He just wants someone to, like, continue his legacy because he never had a son or a daughter.
Nailed it. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Finally, as part of a Channel 4 in the UK, a reality show called Eden, 23 people were taken to the Ardnamurchan Peninsula. That's not how you pronounce it, in Scotland, and told to fend them for themselves for 12 months with no outside assistance or contact. So this is a remote area. There's no services around. Participants had to do all their own filming. 10 people made it to the end of the year. And when they came back to civilization, they found that Channel 4 had only aired 4 episodes.
I read this. This is so beeped up. There, I did it for you, Scott.
Thank you so much.
Channel 4 says the show will return sometime this year. But
Oh, they did say they'll show the rest of whatever they did then.
That's a, well, sort of.
Okay.
They didn't commit to a time, though.
Because this came up on TMS, and we dissected it the best we could. We were trying to understand how, well, so generally speaking, we've had people on from reality show editing and other things on the show before. My understanding is they would have filmed this well in advance, had it all, you know, done and completed. They sign NDAs not to say anything publicly about what happened during episodes. And then as they air, then they can talk about the episodes that aired. And if they only, my thinking is they were long done with this. And all that ever happened was four of those air, or whatever the number was. Was it seven? Seven episodes.
Four episodes aired.
Four episodes. I get it confused with Channel 4, but four episodes airs total, and then they stop airing them. But they're long out. It's not that you're still in the wilderness working away for another 8 months thinking that they're getting filmed. It's. I guess what I'm trying to say is the way our brains want to hear this story is that, oh, they're still out in the woods and you canceled the show? No, the show got canceled after everything was filmed. May not all be edited, but they're home. The event is over.
As I understood it, Four of the episodes aired while some of the people were still out in the woods.
Oh, wow. So that is it. That's a bummer, dude.
Yeah.
Because they're out there like starving. They're eating like their shoes and stuff to stay alive. Like, that's no fun for anybody. That's an awful.
Although apparently some of them were seen in the nearest village getting dental work done.
Oh, yeah. I read about that. They'd like cracked their teeth because they were eating chicken feed.
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's right.
It has,
right.
Like, rocks in it.
Yeah, chicken feed has, it's how they the chickens keep their systems moving.
Yeah.
Also, gravel. In Eden, I imagine there's no chicken feed. So where'd they get the chicken feed?
Yeah. Like, if they're allowed to have chicken feed, they should be allowed to have toothbrushes. Come right. on.
Yeah. Which came first, the chicken feed or the egg or something like that?
So many questions.
So many questions. All of them go unanswered. But I'll tell you what does not go unanswered, and that is our request for our listeners to suggest stories for us. They do it each and every week. Tom, who gave us stories this week?
Yes, Gatekeeper, Strike It Rich One, and Kilmarnock were all people who submitted stories at currentgeek.reddit.com that were used on today's show. And thanks to everyone who submits stories over there and votes on them. The voting is just as important. Get over there and help us out at currentgeek.reddit.com.
It's part of the show where we let our guests talk a little bit about the projects they're working on. I'm very curious, Daniel Way, not only about your comic book writing, but the Geek Craft Expo. Explain to people what that is.
Okay, so... seeing as how we're all kind of nerdy, I assume most of us have been to a comic book convention.
Yep.
You walk around Artist Alley and you'll see here and there, kind of at random, you know, people that make these really cool handmade things, fan art kind of things. Usually take, you know, crafting plus their own particular brand of geekiness, and they stick them together and they're like, I made oven mitts that look like the Infinity Gauntlet. You know, I made a planter that looks like Cthulhu.
Right.
I always thought that stuff was really super cool. And it was really the only stuff that I would buy at conventions. I mean, the last thing I need is more books. I mean, I'm kind of awash in them. Anyway, I had the thought that it would be cool if there was like a crafter that was just that geeky stuff. Kind of take it all out, put all those crafters together, like pull up, you know, pull them together. And then do a craft market. And that became Geekcraft Expo.
Wow, that sounds awesome. Where is it held? Where do you guys do it?
We do them all over the country. We're doing one, let's see, next month we have one in Raleigh-Durham in North Carolina. And then June is in Portland, Oregon. July, August is in New York City. That's a new show in Brooklyn. That's the one that we're kind of concentrating on, you know, putting together right now. It's always tough setting up a show because it's a new thing. It's a new kind of show. And frankly, you know, the exhibitors that we approach, and you know, they don't know us. And this, it kills me to come to grips with this, but when it comes to Geekcraft Expo, I mean, I'm a promoter, which is, it puts me in a group of people that's not so great. You know, it's like, us and Don
King. But we
King.
Need more good people doing promoter stuff.
Yeah, so the guy that put King Kong in chains and sold tickets, you know.
Yeah.
But, you put the artists in chains and make them do work?
I like
no, there's some people who would pay you actually, to do that for them.
Yeah. We actually, I mean, the crafters that do our shows always do like really, really well. And it's kind of not hard to see why when you look at it, because A, it's a free show. And B, since we market the heck out of them, and it's everyone who shows up at the show is there for geeky handmade stuff. So most of the selling's done, and we don't kind of, you know, squeeze them as they come in. You know, they just, so yeah, they do really, really well. But like I said, it's a new thing, and you know, the first year is always kind of touch and go. But once it's up and running, and once everyone kind of gets a look at it, then they just they really take off. Like we just did our second event in Madison, Wisconsin, and it was like 150% growth in the second year. I mean, it was huge.
That's intense.
Well, it solves so many problems because I can think about cons that I've gone to where one complaint is the dealer room is so far away.
Right.
But people will still trek over there because they want to get that stuff. So you know there's demand for it. And then the dealers complain that it's so far away and they don't get the traffic that they need.
Right, they're cut off.
There's lots of looky-loos who really aren't there to buy.
And well, that's
you're streamlining
gonna,
that.
Yeah, that's always going to be the issue when... So let's say you know, one of these crafters sets up at a comic book convention. And I love comic book conventions. I go, you know, to quite a few. But precious few conventions actually mention at all in any of their marketing, by the way, we're going to have hand crafters here. So no one, they always, people were looking around, they find them, they're like, I had no idea you'd be here.
Yeah.
And since they had no idea they'd be there, it's not in the budget because, you know, it's $40, $50 for a ticket to get to the show, you know, $200 for the Stan Lee Super Pass or, you know, and let's, there's only so much, you know, disposable income to go around. So yeah, I mean, it's basically, a lot of times I just describe it as I take Artist Alley out of the convention and put it into a different building and allow people to come in and shop for free.
Do you also sell anything there too, or you just organize?
No, anything I make, I only make one of them. And it's usually just, again, for something that I want to have.
Yeah.
I just thought, I admire people that can do this stuff. I enjoy owning some of it. You know, I like to look around my house and see this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. It's part of the geek society that what I really love about geeks, and you know, and I'm one of them, is that we don't love anything like a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and we're really supportive and we're really inclusive, you know, and I'm big on community development and community action. You know,
if there's one thing people have complained about in the last few years, I would say maybe last 5 years about conventions, is that those in Artist Alley, and I've been one of those guys before. April, you've certainly been in an Artist Alley before.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like, and generally there's a feeling that is getting less and less. It's being more and more and more marginalized. It's being pushed off to the side. It's big Hollywood stuff instead. It's big space dedicated to special effects for Lord of the Rings or, you know, something for Walking Dead or whatever. And that's all great. And everyone loves that stuff. And it's maybe the natural way these things grow, but it does feel like that stuff's being segmented in a way that's just less interesting than it used to be. It sounds like what you're doing addresses that directly. And that's kind of awesome from my perspective.
I guess it does. Yeah. But just to put this out there, just so you know, I mean, when I was doing all that stuff for Marvel, it's not just happening in Artist Alley. You know, I've been signing at the Marvel booth in San Diego with a bunch of other comic book creators. And all of a sudden, you know, someone will come up on the stage in the booth and they're like, we have worthless trinkets from the Avengers movie. And the place will get mobbed and like the signing shut down, you know, while they throw it out in the crowd and people just lose it. You know, and you only have an hour to sign. And once it's done, it's done. You know, they pretty much get the hook and pull you off.
Yeah.
So it's. Yeah, a lot of stuff has overtaken, I don't know, this little thing that we all kept alive for so long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And another big factor and thing that kind of motivated me to actually just say it is a good idea. I'm going to go ahead and do it, is because we're starting to see this stuff in like the mall, you know, and like Target. And And that's good because it's like training wheels for, you know, for people who are like, you know, geeky stuff. Yeah. There you go. You know, so it gets them started and then it's like, okay, now do you want to see kind of the class, the captain's cupboard, you know, the select good handmade stuff where it's
right.
It's really awesome.
Yeah.
And you're buying it. I mean, every show we do these all over the place, but every show basically exists as a component of that local geeky, crafty scene. Mm-hmm. So you're buying stuff. You go to a local show and you're paying money to a local artist. And, you know, you're supporting a local business. It's another big thing for me. Yeah.
Right.
I grew up in the Midwest. My town's basically gone. So, yeah.
Where did you grow up?
In Michigan.
Oh. Which, okay. Right. I grew up in Southern Illinois, so it's not that far.
Yeah, Southern Illinois is real
same
close.
Same thing. Like, yeah. And maybe that's why also anyone that is basically in manufacturing, you know, because I was probably the last generation that thought that was like the fallback career, you know, like life path, you know. Mm-hmm. You graduate, you go get a job at a factory, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Union, do your 30 years, get your watch, get your little cottage at the lake.
Yeah.
You know, then that doesn't exist anymore.
I want that. Well, I'm going to get myself a watch when I retire from podcasting. That's my thinking there. Well, that's awesome. People can learn more about it. We'll get some links at the end of the show, so we'll make sure people can find out more, find out when one of these is coming to your area. Man, it'd be so cool if one of these is in Salt Lake. I have so many local friends that love the Comic-Con but hate how
there are plans.
Out. Are there? Oh,
Seattle?
That's great.
Seattle?
There's already one in Seattle.
Oh.
Wait,
we
what?
Had our first
oh,
one okay. last December, and then...
Nice.
And this is kind of exclusive. We're going to have a really big one at Magnuson Park in December.
Whoa.
Well, I'm going to have to look that stuff up because I love selling. I used to sell stuff at like Boston Comic Con when I lived out there. This sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who will want to go, so I'll tell them about
Yo,
it.
Yo, Bill would go to that. You know how many people would go to that? Holy crap.
Oh, dude. Yeah, Bill and Britt would be all over that.
Yeah, they would eat that up. Oh, my gosh. Half the people I know in Seattle, would their lives are about to change. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for all that. Hey, April, let's talk about what you got going on. What is happening in the world of the Viking Lass?
Oh my gosh. Lots of crazy cool things. Right now, I think the coolest thing for me, which is the newest thing, is I do voice work now. I've been in a video game. I might be in a couple more, but I do voice work for Amazon Prime, which is really fun. So all those Twitch Prime commercials you hear, that's what I meant, Twitch Prime, that's me. And I've been going back monthly and doing the updates. I have a date set next week for something. Can't say what, but it's opened up a lot of really cool new things for me. So that's super fun. And then also I've been selling a lot of my artwork, which is a lot of abstracts. I've been still keeping to doing my own original stuff. A lot of abstract painting and mixed media of me drawing on the paintings. And so I put those up on eBay and those do pretty good. Hey, I can pay my bills and feed myself. So
that's good.
That helps. Yeah. And then I'm also involved with another channel, Hyper RPG. They're on Twitch and they have a show that's a Battletech show. And I knew nothing about mechs or Battletech until they hired me. I paint the mechs for them. So I get these sweet mechs to take home and learn how to paint. And the best part is during the show that I'm on, when they're using these on a tabletop game, they take live damage. They let me have a drill and I drill and I hammer these things. And I call myself the mech executioner, but don't say that really fast because it sounds racist.
Yeah, it does.
and I'm more of an organic artist. A lot of my work has like a very natural, people say like organic tribal-y flow to it.
Yeah.
So working with mechs, which are these like square blocky, like, machine parts was so hard for me to learn, but it was so much fun. So those are like the biggest things, that and streaming.
Yeah.
I was saying to Scott before, like, you know, before the show, like, it's just like, what am I doing? So many things.
I know.
I don't have like any one big thing going on right now. I've just got so many, as Nicole says, so many balls in the air.
Yep.
And I'm trying to throw as many up there as I can and do what I can. And
it's a good idea.
Things are working.
You throw that.
I'm
going
to start a campaign to get Amazon to add April as one of the options on the Amazon Echo.
There you go.
I would love to do that. I could do like a robot voice.
Yes.
Your neck is on fire.
Oh, I man.
I your found stove a, is burning I, down your house.
I found what I think is one of your ads. Hold on. I want to see if we can hear this. It's some kind of truck pulling a box.
No.
No, this isn't it. Nope, that's just music. Dang it. I'm going to find these.
There's some on Facebook. There are some ads on Twitter. The main one is Amazon. What is it? Twitchprime.com, I believe. Yeah. Or Twitch. Yeah, let's see. Oh, this is my own stuff.
Hey, look, it's hard to remember this stuff. I understand.
Oh, yeah, twitchprime.com.
Oh, here we go. All right, I'm going to just play this.
Here's a couple things you should know about Twitch Prime. Exclusive content like skins, characters, and boosts from games you love, plus free games. Exclusive members-only prices on new release box games.
That is so awesome. I freaking love it.
With thousands of playlists and stations.
I love it. Having done some VO myself, I know how fun that can be and also how tiring it can be. So best of luck in the future with that stuff.
Thank you. Quick question. Do you get sweaty when you do VO?
Yeah, big time.
I get so sweaty.
Yeah, big time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I did some stuff for GE a few years ago, and that was the sweatiest time I ever spent in front of a microphone. I'm still sweating from it, actually. Right now, I'm sweating from it.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, we'll talk more about where all these places can be found. These things you're working on can be found at the end of the show. Huge thanks for breaking that stuff down for us. It's time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
That music means it's time for us to figure out why the volume won't go down. There we go. We're going to talk about areas of your expertise. Our guests are going to answer questions, and the topics of which came to us from Hammond when he asked you to be on the show. That means I apologize in advance because he may be trying to punk all of you. I don't know. But we're about to find out. When you get an answer right, you're going to hear this sound. When you get it wrong, you'll hear this. We're going to start with April. April, are you ready for your questions?
Sure.
Your topic is Firefly trivia.
Oh, gosh.
You're a brown coat. You like that show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I dressed up as Kaylee a lot.
Oh, right.
For cosplay.
That's right. Every Nerdtacular, I swear, you were in the Kaylee cosplay.
Yeah, so. It's so comfy, and I had long hair. It was great.
Yeah.
But now I can't.
No, you can't do that anymore. Well, you'd have to be alternate world Kaylee or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, wig would be fine. Tom's going to keep score, by the way, this entire time, and beware, he does weird stuff. That's
Can I bribe him?
No, Tom, yeah, you totally like? Can. Whether or not it works is.
I got peeps, man. You like this stuff?
Peeps.
It's marshmallow.
All right. Here we go. Have you tried the Peeps Oreos, by the way? They're horrifying.
I'm scared to.
Yeah, don't do it.
My friend did it, and yes, her poo turned pink.
Yeah, you get pink poo. It's not good. Don't do it.
You get rainbow poo if you eat an entire box of Cap'n Crunch in one day. Not going to tell you how I know, but there's that for you.
Do you remember in the 80s there was the cereal called Kaboom?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
That was scary.
The irony.
That scared a lot of parents.
Yeah.
My mom bought it for us once.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids like Kaboom for what Kaboom has not, or I forget how the phrase goes, but yes, Kaboom. It's going to give you some trouble.
Yeah.
Here's your question, April. It starts with this one. What is the only episode in which Shepherd Book speaks in Mandarin? The third one, you say, is it? Well, let's find out. Incorrect. The answer is War Stories is the answer. So close. I don't even know if that may be the third episode. I don't know.
Someone should check.
Yeah. Tom, you're a big fan. Do you think that's third? I don't know.
Yes, it is.
Well, it depends on you're going by airing order or are you going by production order?
I'm going by whatever makes my answer right order.
Oh, shoot. Well, then you're screwed either way because wrong. Next question. What is the name of the final episode of Firefly?
Why?
Incorrect. It is Objects in Space.
But she gets a point for being poetically accurate.
Told you. See, Tom does stuff. It's weird. Next up, who sings the opening theme song to Firefly?
Oh, a dude.
Yeah, you're right about that, but not enough. His name is Sonny Rhodes. Tom, you have anything to add there?
Hey, Tom. Tom. Oh,
half point for... accurately stating that he is in fact a dude.
All right.
And then quarter point for that peep.
Nice. Nicely done. Quarter point peep.
For you.
Quarter point peep is a great name for a band, don't you think?
Oh, I love when they used to play at the Hole in the Wall.
They were so good. Quarter point peep. Always went out when they were there. Next up, who plays the operative in the film Serenity?
Oh, balls.
You know who this is. He's great. He's a fine actor.
I'm so bad with names.
Yeah. Well, this name, you're almost required to be bad with this name because it's a bad name. But I mean, whatever. It's his name, but it's a hard name to say is what I mean.
You know what? I'm just going to say Mr. Bean.
You are so close, but not close enough. It is Chiwetel Ejiofor. How do you say his name? Chiwetel Ejiofor. Anyway,
I'm going to go ahead and say you got that wrong.
Yeah.
Can we take a point away from Scott?
Yeah.
I'm going to give April a half point for having to listen to Scott try to pronounce that name.
Appreciate it.
I noticed nobody else is attempting it. That's something I'm noticing.
No.
Yeah. No. One wants to try. I'll give myself that. All right. Fine enough. All right. Final question in your category. How do reavers clean their spears?
By licking them.
Incorrect. If you saw Serenity, you would know the answer is they run them.
Don't say they put them through the wash.
They put them through the wash.
No.
I didn't write these. I said
that before you said it. Do I get a point?
That's another point for having to deal with that answer.
I did not write them.
Too soon.
I didn't write these. I promise.
You may be the messenger, but I need to send a message back to everyone, and that's by putting a... Never mind.
Alan Tudyk is alive and well, and everything's great. He's fine.
Yeah, he's on Powerless.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be good. I keep hearing The Magicians is something I should watch. Can I get a quick yes or no? All right.
Did you know he was Heihei in Moana?
Yes.
He was the chicken.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he was a little chicken.
I love that man.
He was in Dave the Pirate in dodgeball thing, and he was also the voice of iRobot in iRobot, or he was the robot voice, which is kind of cool.
I love that man.
Anyway. Here's very well done. We'll get back to your score in a minute, but first, Daniel, your questions lay before me in the form of Deadpool trivia. Deadpool.
Okay.
Did you write Deadpool for a while?
I did. I wrote, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know if this record still stands, but I at least held the record for most consecutive issues.
Oh my gosh.
Jerry Duggan might at this point be. That's passed me, if not surpassed me.
Yeah.
That was 65 issues.
So how did you, 5 years. Not to out you at all on this, but how did you feel how the movie turned out? Were you pretty happy with what came out of that?
The Deadpool film? Yeah, it was. I was happy with it. I've been talking with Tim Miller about that movie for a long time. Because as you probably know, it took a long time to get made.
Yeah, that thing was in development hell for a while.
Yeah, he sent me the script and sent me some footage and stuff, and just kind of wanted my thoughts on it. Yeah, we got to go out to the set in Vancouver, walk around this filthy aluminum recycling center.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool in that, you know, recycling center, they make their money, you know, getting rid of metal.
Yeah.
So all that awesome metal trash that you see in that big fight scene, it was all, they imported that.
They had to bring it in. That's amazing.
That's
but yeah,
great.
I was happy with that. I thought it came out great.
All right, good. Well, I if anyone's listening, that's as good I think that's as good as you're going to get as far as a nod in the yes direction for something like Deadpool from a prolific writer of the series itself.
First question, where did all the metal come from?
Yeah, now? Right. Oh, dang. I've given one away. No, here's your first question. In what comic book does Deadpool make his very first appearance?
New Mutants.
Oh my gosh, you... Whipped it out and got it. You'd have gotten bonus points if you knew the number. 98 is the number, but you knew the number. Oh my gosh, Tom. All right, half point bonus on that. Nicely done. How does Deadpool kill Thor and Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe? Before people scream spoiler, this is an old comic, so.
I mean, yeah.
It's not anything new.
Oh,
Scarlet
wait.
Scarlet Green is also made of people.
I actually don't. I mean, I could guess.
You can guess. I'm totally fine to guess.
I don't know. He smote him. Smote him to death.
You are incorrect. The actual answer is he shrinks Thor with the Pym particles and gets Thor crushed. Let's see. Oh, no. Thor gets crushed. Mjolnir. I don't. He wrote the sentence weird. When he tries to pull it to himself. Oh, I see. Okay. So he tried to pull Mjolnir to him while he was getting shrunk, and it killed him. It smashed him.
In one of the Gale Simo issues, didn't Rhino get shrunk and put on a keychain?
Oh, maybe. Well, those Pym particles, just a big pain in the A is what those are.
And I had my editor at the time, I had written a story where he and Taskmaster were going to go steal some Pym particles. The whole time, Deadpool thought they were going after Pimp Article. and I got it in there, and then my editor was like, you know, that slipped by me. I never would have let that fly. It ruined it.
That's really funny. I like it. I'm glad. All right, next question. The pizza scene in the Deadpool movie was taken right from a comic. What kind of pizza did Deadpool order in the comic?
Pineapple and black olive with a burnt crust.
Oh, my God. Gosh, dude.
I wrote that.
You wrote that. You actually wrote that? That's crazy.
Yeah, I wrote that.
I wrote that.
That's amazing. And that you
remember. Otherwise, I would give you a speed bonus, except you actually wrote it.
Yeah, so. I was like, well, where's the twist on this question?
There's no challenge, man. That is okay. That's awesome. One of Deadpool's homies, it says here, is Cable. In what year did Cable and Deadpool number one get published?
Cable Deadpool one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say 99.
Let's find out if that is correct. 2004. Oh. 2004 is the correct answer.
Shoot. I thought that book ran for longer than it did, I guess.
Yeah, I never picked it up. I remember seeing it and thinking, I might like that, and then I never did. Final question. Who was
right, I got to redeem myself.
Yeah, man. Here you go. This is your big comeback. Who was Deadpool known as during the Age of Apocalypse storyline?
Oh, gosh. He's a horseman.
I'll give you three. I'll give you a hint. It's three words. Three separate English words.
I didn't get any hints.
Yeah, I was known as I don't know.
Oh, you're so close with the ah.
Yeah.
It's Dead Man Wade is the correct answer.
Dead Man Wade.
Now, you would get a full point for correctly answering I don't know, but then Scott gave you a hint and didn't give April one, so I deduct a quarter point. So you get 0.75 for that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're enemies now, Daniel. I'm sorry. At first, I was like, "Oh, he's an ally," but now we are.
April always gets justice. Enemies. April gets justice every freaking time.
And we end up, Scott, with a final score of Daniel 3.25, April 3.25.
Oh my gosh! Are you kidding me? That's amazing.
I didn't get one right. Oh.
That's incredible. Well done, you guys. That was way fun and more fun.
We
than
are
it should
the
have
nerdiest.
Been.
We yeah, win.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. We
okay,
all
high five.
Win.
We're good again.
We got one last bit to do, and it starts like this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
We used to have a show called Forecast to predict the future, and now we have it as a segment on this show, and we like to pick things like the future and technology and pop culture and whatever it is that we're sort of in the mood for. Oh, one of them just went away. April's yours. Who typed over that? Somebody typed over that. Someone has escaped.
Was it me?
I think it may have been me. sorry. So,
I still see it.
April, tell us about yours. Very curious about this. What's your prediction?
Okay. So, just imagine, you know, you're going to a new restaurant. You're going to a new Thai place, and you're a big fan of pad thai. Okay, let's not lie. This is me. I love pad thai and pad see you, and that's about it.
Me too.
So I go to a Thai place, and I'm like, man, I want to try something new today. But I don't want to risk my $15 on a meal that I may not like, because when you don't like Thai food, you usually really don't like it. So how cool would it be to know if it's something you're going to like to taste? Yeah. And it's like, huh, how cool would it be if you could swipe a card that has all of your favorite taste or something on it, and it will go bloop, and then suddenly on like a screen, you can see out of the menu what things you might enjoy. Now, what's interesting is that some people are genetically prone to like or dislike certain tastes. So I don't know how deep that goes. So you could, like, how cool would it be if you could do a blood test so you could get this awesome card made for yourself? Or it's even a little chip implanted into your hand somewhere so you can just go to a restaurant and scan it. Because, hey, who cares? Everyone's going to know everything about us anyway soon with this new, like, Information Act.
Yeah.
Like, how cool would that be?
Yeah, it would be really cool. Here's my thinking, though. I like this a lot, by the way. And also, it changes. So as you get older, your tastes change. There are updates. They literally what you can
tolerate. Oh, that was the old card. They served me cilantro.
Yeah, exactly. Your pee smells like whatever that thing that makes it smell like pee. But anyway, the point is, like, when you're a little kid, you might think all you like is sugary cereals and corn dogs. But if you have the information about what those tastes translate to in terms of data, then you could probably do a lot more to get a kid better fed when they're younger. So, for example, that card goes in and it says, oh, they really like these things. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually give them healthy vegetable this and that, but they're going to have a little bit of corn doggy flavor, or it's going to be saltier, or whatever the thing is that's you know,
corn dog flavored broccoli.
Genetically altered paste that tastes good for you but has all the nutrition you need.
It's a great idea. Yeah,
so it's like the Minority Report for food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Predict
oh my
it.
God.
So what I like about this, though, is we always get the food replicator, vat-based meat growth, like all these kinds of predictions on this show. No one's ever gone as far as to say, let's make it customized per person, like really zero in. It's not just I'd like a burger and a Coke. It's I want whatever burger matches my tastes at the current age I'm at. Like, that's a really nice little refinement.
Yeah, like, it's like you could go in. My friend just told me, like, oh, I went to this Thai place, and this is why I said Thai food today. Mm-hmm. I went to this Thai place, and I had this basil chicken, and it was really good, and I'm really glad I went on a limb. And, you know, $15 is a big deal for some people, so it's just like it would be really nice to get something and know if you like it or not. Another thing is, like, pad Thai. I really like my Thai food, apparently. Yeah. Pad Thai, there's, like, two kinds. There's, like, one that's kind of like a beige color. And then there's another kind that has this like red tinge to it. And for me, I don't know, maybe I had a stroke at some point, but it tastes like ketchup. And I hate it. I really, really hate it. So I don't know. I can't like call a pad Thai place or walk and be like, hi, do you have the ketchup pad Thai or the good shirt there? Yeah. I saved you again, Scott.
All right.
So like, it'd be really nice to like go in there and like, you know, just swipe your thumb on something or like you got your card and put it in the little slot on the table. And it's just like, bing, you will hate this pad Thai, or bing, you're going to go crazy over this pad Thai. And then it'd be an awesome eating experience. And, you know, you don't have to worry about grumpy older relatives being like, oh, this fish isn't the way I like it.
You're going to be like that's going to be you, because this will be about the time you're that age, I'm thinking.
Oh, man. Oh dude, yeah, I'm going to be
my father-in-law for sure.
Oh my lord.
I can't wait to be an old lady. Oh, it's gonna be so much fun.
Well done. That's a great pick, I think. Daniel, you also had one. It's unusual on our show actually to have two of these, so I'm really excited about this. What is your big prediction?
So it just kind of popped into my head when you put it out there for predictions, and because it was I predict that in probably 3 years, I think that we'll see the end of printed comic books. I think that the major publishers will get out of paper printing and just move to like a monthly subscription streaming service like Netflix.
Oh man, I would love this. We do, and when Comixology did their, what did they call it, Tom? They had a name.
Unlimited.
Unlimited, which turns out to be not all that unlimited, but whatever.
Some limited.
Sort of limited.
Sort of limited edition, but I like it in theory because it's a monthly subscription. It's relatively inexpensive, and you
well, get
a
Marvel bunch of comments. Has theirs too.
Yeah, and Marvel has theirs. And this is part of the problem. So this is what I would pose to you. I'm all for your utopic future of digital comics as a subscription service. I would love that. I want that now.
I'm not saying it's my utopia. I actually love comic book stores. So
yeah, well, me too. So I'm torn on all this, right? Like, I don't want to not have comic book stores, but I also kind of see the writing on the wall a little bit. So let's say it happens in 3 or 4 years, like you say. What is something needs to happen though, so that we're not buying 4 subscription services to Marvel, DC, you know, Image and everybody else. What we're looking for is more like the Netflix model, which is a lot of different content creators all in the same place. And I know there's some of this division in video streaming with, you know, you can only get Seinfeld on Hulu and you can only get Friends on Netflix and that sort of thing. But do you think that has to happen before this fully takes form, or will it be fine? Will people be willing to pay for a Dark Horse subscription right next to their, you know, IDW subscription or whatever?
Actually, I hadn't considered that. I, in kind of thinking it through, I did. My feeling is that the only question is who would go first, because the others would immediately follow, just to not be kind of stuck on the sinking ship.
Yeah.
But if I don't know if they would like. It seems like the first one to the table to make a deal, especially with an existing service, would probably be the one in the best position. So, you know, if it all ended up, that would be weird if like all comics ended up on like Amazon or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Amazon bought Comixology, and maybe it'll take somebody with their kind of money to round these guys up.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
I just don't think print will go away altogether.
I think there'll still be a collector's market.
Yeah, because there'll be a collector's market, and print books are actually rising in sales again because people like to have them. So especially with comics, when you want to see the art.
Yeah.
I think what'll happen though, I think you're like most of the way to being right, where a lot of titles will be digital only. That will increase.
Mm-hmm. But they could still, even in that case, you know,
if they get popular enough, then they can spring for the collectible.
Yeah, at the end of the run, there's a huge trade that you can go pick up or whatever. And I think I like that future as much as I like, you know, buying certain video games in their collector's edition formats. I prefer digital almost across the board, but occasionally there's something I want.
Because I work in games too, so, and I see that, you know, game publishers are definitely going this way. It makes sense, just like the comic thing would make sense from a profit standpoint. Game publishers aren't really in love with, you know, the fact that there are like all these stores out there that sell used games.
Right. Yeah.
They'd much rather you download, you know, and not have an actual physical copy that can be like, oh man, this game was dope, but I'm done. Yeah. Here you go, buddy. You know?
Yeah.
Let's trade, or here, just take it.
Yeah. And we had news this week that sort of points into that direction sooner than I thought, but GameStop's closing, 190 stores or something.
They're opening more of their collectible brand stores.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's exactly what we're talking about. Pointing right there.
They have collectible brand stores? Like what?
Yeah, they have like 100 or so. They're not too many of them yet, but they focus on selling, you know, game and geeky collectibles.
Yeah, so it's like a lot of bobbleheads and figurines and, you know.
Oh, like Newbury. So Newbury Comics is something, when I was in Boston, I don't know how far they go, but Newbury Comics is a big geeky place that has a bunch of just like comics. It's got geek apparel. It's got music, video games. It's kind of like FYE if it went super down the geek route.
Yeah.
And that's actually where I get a bunch of, where I got, no, it wasn't my first Labbit there, but like that's where I saw Labbits. I'm obsessed with the mustachioed bunnies there.
Oh yeah, they're so cute.
And they got a little butthole.
Wait a minute. Are they good for anything? Or you jam your change in there? What's that for? What do you do with the butthole?
It's for pooping.
Oh,
really?
All right. Scott, I don't know.
Jam your change.
Scott is not for anything. It's just there, man. Like, ugh.
It's not good for the bunny. Oh my gosh, Tom, that was funny.
Actually, I think that it would actually be kind of cool if, you know, let's say as far as new content for comics. You know, they just went all digital, but then for the collector's market, they just went with like high end, you know, collections and because like my own work, most of it, I'll get comp copies. I've given most of them away. They're like, people are like, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
The ones that I keep are almost always foreign reprints because the printing and the reproduction is better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like the fetishism of holding the book. You know, I like books. I like the artifacts. And, but the better the printing is and the better the paper is and the more heft to it, I mean, that would be great because let's face it, most monthly comics are printed on just kind of garbagey magazine stock. They don't, you know, like, yeah, unless you're reading it by candlelight, you have to keep tilting the book to keep that shiny surface off of it, you know, it looks better with better printing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can appreciate the art more.
By the way, I just realized I read your Ghost Rider Volume 6, 1 through 19 run in 2006.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I really liked that. I didn't know that was you. I'm learning all kinds of things.
We'd have to do a whole other segment to like give you the backstory on that Ghost Rider run. That was some brinksmanship right there.
Really? All right. Maybe we will have to do that. That sounds kind of amazing. All right. Excellent stuff. Great predictions. Both seem actually plausible. If we can get past the whole, we need to replicate our food. It feels like April's is like, I don't know. It's kind of like Google search. You could just search.
I hear her idea and I just see it as a way to identify terrible cooks and get them out of there. You know? Like, the owner's sitting there. And he's like, everyone who swipes their card, it says that they're not going to enjoy this food. You know what? I think it might be you.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
You're
a terrible cook.
That's funny.
Yeah. Oh, and then, imagine if they get like a big database and put it online so you could be at home.
So
and
that
then
cook
imagine
would never
if
get
it gets
hired.
What?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. But like, then you'll be like at home. It's like, and they'll be able to take into account not just your body, like they'll have like, you'll have your own little pinprick thing at home. So that you could pinprick it and it'll take account all of the different hormones and chemicals going on in you. It's like, man, I'm hungry, but I don't know what I want. So you don't have to have that stupid conversation with your spouse anymore. What do you want to eat? Oh, I don't know. What do you want to eat? Oh, let's ask the computer.
Yep.
Oh, you want this, I want this, let's go.
Yeah. And then DoorDash just orders it and it gets brought to you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
And then there's an app that reads your mind and then none of that has to happen.
I just don't want to, I don't want to prick anything.
The Elon Musk is investing in.
Exactly. I don't want to prick my finger though. I want a better way than that. Give me a, I'll
give
my
hair.
Well,
you just got to do it once. Yeah. So then you...
Oh, okay. Then you have it uploaded to the cloud.
All right.
Yeah. You'd have it once, just the card. And then people, if they really want to, they can do the pimp.
Hated that since I was a kid. I can get shots in the arm, whatever. Doesn't matter. Take blood, whatever you need. But give me a pinprick and it's something I have. I associate that with child terror.
They're like, I'm going to put this right in the very tip of your finger where all the nerve endings are.
Right.
I can't. I'm not going to poke you anywhere else.
Yeah.
It would also work there.
Yeah. But, yeah. It's stupid. Yeah. It's
right
dumb.
Right on the very tip of your finger.
Yeah,
it's like the lady who put an IV in the middle of my forearm once, and I had a bruise there for a month and a half.
Hey, that's not so bad. I had one in between my toes once when I was 14. Long story, but I won't tell it here. Anyway, amazing stuff. Great predictions. If you have your own predictions at home, you can certainly email those in, currentgeek@gmail.com. Before we go, let's give our guests one more chance to tell us where their stuff can be found. April, we need all your websites and Twitters and things. Where can people find you?
So on Twitter, I'm Viking_Lass. Instagram, VikingLass, one word. And then if you want to hear my VO stuff for Twitch Prime, just go to twitchprime.com. And then you can catch all my streams where I do a lot of artwork. I love people to come in and just chill. While I get work done, I call it Work and Lurk, twitch.tv/Viking_Lass.
Oh, I like that. Work and Lurk is good.
Yeah.
I feel dumb that I didn't think of that name. That's a really good name.
Haha, it's mine.
Daniel, where should people go find more about your work and certainly about the GeekCraft Expo?
So if you're interested, especially people in the New York area, in the kind of the tri-state area around New York, if you're an exhibitor, go to geekcraftexpo.com. There's an exhibitor application right there. It's really easy to fill out and send it over to us. If you're interested in just going to a GeekCraft show, again, just go to the website. They're all over the place and kind of throughout the calendar year. And let's see. Buy this book I wrote called Gun Theory. It's probably hanging out in your local comic book store. And if you want to... You can see all my stuff at comicschannel.com, comixchannel.com.
Nice. He's all up in Wikipedia as well, everybody. I've been looking through there, checking out stuff. You have likely read something he wrote if you're a big, especially if you're a big Marvel fan. So go check that out. You guys were awesome. Tom Merritt, anything else, sir, before we go?
Just a big thanks to everybody who has bought my novel Pilot X. It's a physical book with a lovely texture on the cover, in case you're interested in a book about time travel.
I'm writing it down.
Pilot, I'm gonna buy it so I can touch it.
X. Yeah, you should. Or at least just go out to a local bookstore and find it. It is a really cool texture on the cover. And it's about a time traveler who has to face a horrible decision between saving his own people or the rest of the universe. Big thanks to people leaving reviews on Amazon. That's super helpful. We're 11 reviews away from 100 customer reviews, which I'm told is the magic point on Amazon for some reason. So if you haven't reviewed it yet, please head over to Amazon and leave a review. Thanks, everybody.
Do that. The book's great. You guys need to check it out. And grats on that. Hey, don't forget our website. It is at currentgeek.com. Everything you need to know is there. How to get the show, how to listen to the show, how to watch the VOD on YouTube after, all that kind of stuff. So go check that out. Again, currentgeek.reddit.com for stories. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review an interesting field of trademark coverage, that being coverage of scents and smells, based on a recent application filed by game and toy giant Hasbro. Trademarks are granted federal registrations based on distinctiveness and whether the mark properly serves as a source identifier for goods and services in the mind of an average consumer. Word marks like company or product names and the design logos used by companies and products are typically where the vast majority of registrations and coverage appears in this legal field. However, there are some potential frontiers for expansion to other types of source identifiers, and scent is one of those that could be poised for a boom. Hasbro filed an application to register the smell of Play-Doh this month, arguing that the scent of the child toy has acquired distinctiveness over the last 60 years. The application describes this scent as a sweet, slightly musky, vanilla-like fragrance with slight overtones of cherry and the natural smell of a salted, wheat-based dough. that paints a mental picture fairly well for the scent Hasbro intends to cover, at least in the field of toy modeling compounds. Since the first smell-based registration was issued in 1990 for a flower scent on yarns, only about 10 more scent registrations have successfully followed in the last 3 decades. Thus, Hasbro faces some significant hurdles in obtaining an allowance on this trademark registration. First, proving that consumers actually associate that smell with the Play-Doh product can be difficult because of a high burden of proof required for this. Second, many scent mark applications have been rejected based on being functional, or an inherent aspect of some or all of the ingredients used for the product, as such functional parts are only covered in the US by patents, not copyrights and trademarks. A smell chosen to make a product more desirable to consumers may be deemed functional rather than source identifying, for example. Some experts who have opined on Hasbro's recent application indicate that while these hurdles are tough to overcome, the Play-Doh scent has a better chance than most products of succeeding at the trademark office. After all, the scent is recognizable and pretty distinctive, and there's no functional reason to make modeling clay smell that particular way with cherry and vanilla overtones. If it does register, there are some interesting hurdles in how Hasbro would actually provide a specimen that could be stored for future reference. And how would this be enforced by a court or evaluated objectively against the scents of competing products? Nose experts would be needed. The bottom line is, Hasbro has a good chance here to obtain a rare registration of the smell of a product, and if that happens, enough other big companies will likely take note and will try to cover their own scents. It could lead to an interesting arms race trend in geek culture and beyond, as we expand the frontiers of possible coverage and intellectual property. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.